I am Brother Cornell West, and this is
If I Can Save America.
Peace and love, everybody. It's your man, Manny Faces. Just wanted to let you know that Hip Hop Can Save America is now available as a live stream show every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. You can find it at hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Excerpts from that show will be played here on the audio feed, so you'll still get the good interviews that you've been used to. But check out the live stream and check out my free Substack newsletter at mannyfaces.substack.com. That's filled with all kinds of stories of hip-hop innovation, inspiration, and generally hip-hop news that isn't about dumb shit. For everything Hip Hop Can Save America, hiphopcansaveamerica.com. For everything Manny Faces, mannyfaces.com. And if you find value in this work, you can support it. We'd love to have you aboard as a supporter at patreon.com/mannyfaces. Now let's go.
The thing about hip hop today is it's smart. It's insightful. The way that they can communicate a complex message in a very short space is remarkable. And a lot of these kids, they're not going to be reading the New York Times. That's not how they're getting their information. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation. Hip hop culture is more than music. Peace to you and speak the truth. Show them what peace can do when there reads for you. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation. Rap is something you do. Hip hop is something you live. So hip hop didn't invent anything, but hip hop reinvented everything.
Representative Jamal Bowman from the great state of New York. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm glad to be with you. I'm always glad to be in space with New Yorkers. I'm a New Yorker that did that thing that we do when I moved to Atlanta. So I apologize, but, you know, I still.
did you do it before or after Freaknik?
I will not be in the documentary. Do not worry. Well, some of our friends might be, but we'll see. We'll see when that drops. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate, and it's good to see you again. I know we crossed paths very briefly over last summer. It's good to see you again. Yes, sir. If you would, I'd like to start where we're at, and we'll work back a little bit. Obviously, the thing, although, you know, we had been on each other's radar possibly, but the thing that caught my attention, of course, was the this hip hop task force that's been launched up there on Capitol Hill. If you could. If you would mind, give me maybe a description of the mission of that initiative and what that's all about.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having me. Good to see you as well. We want to leverage the power, the brilliance, the popularity, the creativity, the social justice and political infrastructure of hip hop to build political power here in Congress. We want the entire hip hop community and culture and family to become a quote unquote lobbying group that is pushing members of Congress to do the right thing for the communities we come from. You know, hip hop has always been a voice of the youth, a voice of the struggle, CNN of the streets, if you will, you know, telling the stories that the real CNN or the you know, Western CNN didn't always want to tell. And so, you know, hip hop has always been that, but that needs to be leveraged to create policy change and the investments that we need in our communities. You know, one of the reasons why the stories in hip hop continue to be about so much struggle is because of horrible policies that lead to, you know, continued gun violence, addiction, lack of affordable housing, lack of mental health care, lack of child care, lack of wealth, on and on and on. The stories remain as they are because of the horrible policies that often start in Washington. And so this is about building political power and working within the entire hip hop community, culture, and family to do so.
Yeah, indeed. You know, we talk about, or we hear very often critique of the music or parts or snippets of the culture that are, you know, shown to, you know, the masses. And that seems to be representative of the entirety of the culture and all that can be. And that's not true. And we always say, when you fix the conditions that create the circumstances where the content comes from, you'll have a better chance at having, you know, more enlightening aspects spread to the masses.
That's exactly right. You know, that's common sense. Don't treat the symptom, treat the cause, right? And so what is at the core causing the conditions in our community? At the core is poverty, at the core is neglect, at the core is marginalization, racism, discrimination. At the core of all that is bad policy and a history of discriminatory policy that has harmed certain communities over others. I mean, we all know that. And so let's use hip hop and work with hip hop to change that.
Yeah. Well, so what does that look like, I guess, in practice? You know, what does a task force consist of? Who's involved? Who do you want to get involved? And what would be sort of the actual steps or things that are happening that task force would be tasked with doing?
Yeah, we need and want everybody and anyone involved. You know, when we talk about building political power, I mean, just look at it this way. There are 535 members of Congress, 100 in the Senate, 435 in the House. Each of those members has to run political races and campaigns to win elections. On the House side, that's every 2 years. On the Senate side, that's every 6 years. So how are we having conversations every day to inform who we're going to support in an election? You know, that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is what policies are moving through Congress and which ones are not moving through Congress? And how are we engaging with each other to build the infrastructure to lobby and ensure that the policies we want to move forward are moving forward? So it starts with, like I said, we want any and everybody. But it starts with a lot of smaller conversations, right? Smaller right. conversations here on the Hill, smaller conversations in our living rooms, and then building out the infrastructure from the grassroots up and out so that we can build power in every corner of the country from a grassroots perspective towards, you know, making the policy changes and getting the financial investments that we need in our mm-hmm. community. So all hands on deck, yeah. but it starts with just right. a lot of conversations, brainstorming, and then building that out.
As you can tell by what I've named this show, I feel like hip hop has a very unique ability to overall help uplift humanity and improve society. This is one of the ways we advocate and talk about all of the ways here very often. And I'm a leading voice for that in areas including education. And I want to go back a bit, if you would, to kind of how you got to here. In your position here before Congress, you, of course, started an academy. You were a principal. So your heart was in education for a long time. If you just let me know kind of a little bit the brief, you know, background of your educational background and why that part is core to what you're doing today.
Yeah, I mean, I worked in education for 20 years before running for Congress. I was an elementary school teacher in the South Bronx for about 5 or 6 years before becoming a high school guidance counselor and dean of students at the High School for Arts and Technology in the MLK campus for 3 years before writing a proposal and opening my own district public, not charter, district public middle school right. In the Northeast Bronx, where I served as a principal for 10 and a half years. And in that entire experience, I worked in what we call Title I schools. These are schools that are chronically underfunded. And in New York City, they're chronically underfunded and serving mostly Black and brown kids. And by brown, I mean Latino, I mean Arab, I mean South Asian, I mean the diaspora, if you will.
Right.
And so I was always incredibly frustrated, you know, when you compare inner city, for lack of a better term, schools to like schools in the wealthy white suburbs. And those schools had every resource they needed to help their kids thrive. And realize their full potential. And our schools and our communities always lack those resources. Now, because of that, that actually gives birth to a lot of our brilliance and creativity, a la hip hop, that we then go on and share with the world. But also because of that, we haven't always benefited economically and socially from the culture that we created, we as people of color. And so, you know, that always frustrated me. And at the same time, we see the consistent harm being done to our kids and families and communities. You know, the year before I decided to run for office, 34 kids died in the K-12 school system in the Bronx and 17 died by suicide. And there was no real conversations happening in our political infrastructure about the connection between our kids, our schools, and the horrible policy. And so that's when I ultimately decided to run for office after finishing my doctorate in 2019. But I also come from that. You know, I lived
right
in East Harlem. I lived on the Upper East Side. I went to public schools my entire life. I grew up during the crack cocaine epidemic. It impacted my family. And so, and I also grew up during the golden age of hip hop, where KRS-One, Chuck D, Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, you know, X-Clan, were doing everything in their power to give us knowledge of self. And so I actually credit that and my amazing mom towards me becoming an educator and giving me my philosophy, my political philosophy, even before I knew or was aware that that was the case.
Right, right. Well, yeah, hip hop and good moms birthed a lot of folks doing that kind of work, for sure.
Absolutely. For sure.
And I got to give some props to my dad, another educator, a distinguished professor of sociology, taught for a good many decades at SUNY Old Westbury, my dad.
Old Westbury.
Yes, indeed.
So no, I was just going to say, some hip hop came out of that area as well. Some classic hip hop.
I grew up in Westbury. So, shouts to Long Island, shouts to Strong Island. Dr. Dre from UMTV Raps, mom taught at my school. So yeah, we're ingrained in Long Island.
That's right. That's right.
Now, on the education tip, I talk to and I consult with a bunch of educators who either use or want to use hip hop as a tool for educating. And sometimes it's to bring hip hop into the schools as a field of study to learn the history and learn all the, different aspects of the culture, but also as a tool for learning other, subjects. As I'm sure you know, a lot of hip hop based education initiatives, they center around culturally relevant or culturally responsive and culturally affirmative pedagogy. And that's all important work. And so we advocate for that, and a bunch of people that I talk to as well. Of course, there's always institutional pushback. You have to sometimes just start a whole damn school to get around some of that stuff. There's also states we hear about, like, what's going on in places like Florida, where it's like they may not be down for, hip hop based education anytime soon.
Oh, not at all.
So there's a lot of pushback that we have to deal with, again, for the perception of hip hop and rap having, such a bad reputation. How can these things work their way into policy? We get a little bit frustrated where we say we got to fight so much to just get a pilot program educators in a Title I school, get the funding and the grants, and it's great, but it doesn't always get the Board of Education's to back it. And so it gets frustrating because we want to see these things on large scale. We know they work. We have the receipts, the research. The kids who grow up and become fantastic people, it's all there. How difficult is it, and what do we need to do to make these things happen in policy, either at a statewide level or even federally? How complicated is that to ever, happen?
Yeah, this is where the task force comes into play. And this is where, organizations like the Hip Hop Caucus and organizations like yours come into play as well. We need people to run for school board at the local level. And let me just take a step back and say this. There are many within the hip hop family and culture and society, if you will, who don't really mess with politics, right? They don't like it. They don't get down with it. They don't trust it. And rightly so, right? Because it's a system.
For good reason.
Yeah, for good reasons, right? It's a system that has not just failed us, but harmed us historically. So we get that. But I think that it's really important for the task force to also engage in civic education and civic engagement to start bringing people in who have decided to stay away from it. And the reason why is we have to be engaged, because things don't change in a democracy unless we are engaged. And so the fact that, take me as an example. I had never run for office before. I did everything I could, for many, many years, learning as much as I could about politics. And then ultimately, I decided one day to run for office, and not just any office, to run for Congress. And I ran for Congress against a 31-year incumbent who was chair of a powerful committee, and we won. We beat him by 16 points. And now I'm in Congress having conversations like this with you and starting something called the Hip Hop Task Force that looks to build more power. And so we have to be in the game to change the game. You can't stay out of the game and look to change it from the outside. So yes, there needs to be work done on the outside in terms of agitation and organizing and movement building, for sure. But we also need to find folks to run for office at the school board level, at the town council level, at the county level, at the state level, and at the federal level. A lot of us, and I'll count myself, I didn't even know what all that was about. I knew president, I knew governor, I knew mayor. Right. That's it. I didn't know all these other people who are critical to decisions that are made in our communities every day. And I could tell you right now, there's probably tens of millions of people who, like me, don't have that education. And so this is about, the task force is about creating that civic engagement infrastructure for all of us to learn as much as we can and then run for office. The last thing I'll say is, a lot of these races in these local municipalities, man, people ain't even paying attention. They're not even voting. You know what I'm saying? You could right. You could get 100 votes and win a race and be on a school board. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
So,
right.
You know, like once we start leaning in, like in my case, I realized that this guy was in Congress with 20,000 votes in a district that had 450,000 registered Democrats. How does that work? Only 20,000 people are voting and this guy's in Congress. He's chair of a committee with all this power. Mm. No, we got to change that structure. And so it doesn't take a lot, but we got to get in the game to change the game.
Yeah, I hear that. And you know what? It's that education piece that's very often missing, getting that out. And the same thing for hip hop. When we tell people that hip hop does all these great things, sometimes even hip hop heads are jaded these days. You know, we don't think that it has that ability anymore. It's thing has totally been commodified and totally taken over by, you know, capitalist interests. And I'm like, listen, I just sat on a panel in Atlanta about the intersection of hip hop and social justice. And we had some folks on the ground that are doing that work. They're not as big as, you know, hip hop caucus, but they're doing no less important work. But it's also like pockets here, pockets there. How can we coalesce and get that kind of at least have a network of folks? So I think that maybe I'm speaking for you, but I think that's something that the task force is maybe well suited for, bringing some of those smaller orgs together that all have these kind of ideas.
Absolutely. We're trying to organize the universe, man. Hip hop is like a Marvel right. universe. We're trying to organize it's, you know, just the artists themselves, man, and the diversity of the artists across time. And as fans, we gravitate towards maybe a handful of artists that almost become like prophets to us, or like messengers to us, who like really guide us in how we live our day-to-day lives. I mentioned those in my life when I was a kid who kind of did that for me. And it exists everywhere in every corner of the country. And so that is the power right there. All of a sudden, you know, we got the Democratic Party, we got the Republican Party, we got the Working Families Party, we got all these parties. Man, one day we could maybe have a hip hop party. You know what I'm saying? And not one day soon, you know, where people are platform of the social justice items that we talked about before to win races in their local municipality. And so the sky's the limit to what we can do with it.
Yeah. And what's great about that is it's all inherent in hip hop. You know, it's all at the DNA. Sometimes we don't know how to articulate it, but we all have that, especially folks that are, you know, really, truly connected to culture. And what's great about it is it's a multicultural, multi-denominational, multi-generational, inclusive, inviting culture, probably is more than any other culture I could think of or ever known to exist.
Come on, man. That's exactly, it's the continuation of the civil rights movement. You know, right. we got Jewish brothers, we got Muslim brothers, we got Christian, we got Buddhist, we got Hindu, we got Latino, we got Black, we got all kinds of Black, West Indian, African, right?
Right.
We got all kinds of Latino, we got Asian, it's young, it's older now, right? Because it's 50 years That's old. Right. So you got people like That's my right. age who's 40, about to be 48. And people who's 12, right? And so it's the exact coalition we need to create a revolution here and around the world. And we're, I mean, listen, those who are leaning into ceasefire right now, you know, in Gaza, that's hip hop. Mm-hmm. Those who are part of the Black Lives Matter movement, that's hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Like that's who we are.
Right. Yep. And always been. Yep. Amen. Two questions for you. I don't want to keep it too long. I got two quickies for you. One is I also co-produce a couple of other media outlets that are political minded. One actually infuses hip hop into social justice journalism. So we interview folks about these issues that aren't being covered as much by the mainstream news. And we actually invite independent hip hop artists to come and drop 316s over the course of the episode. We like to say it's like Democracy Now! And Black Thought had a podcast, baby. it's called Newsbeat. And the other one is run by a really brilliant socioeconomic essayist. That one is, you'll forgive my language, it's called Unfucking the Republic. So it's all, you know, kind of left leaning, certainly progressive leaning politics. And they would get at me if I didn't ask at least one political question around all this hip hop talk, which even though it's the same thing. By the time this airs, we'll have heard the State of the Union. Can you give us a state of the progressive union a little bit, and what we can, you know, what progressive minded folks can look forward to this election season and what we also might need to watch out for, if you could? I know it's a big question, if you could kind of run that down.
Yeah, that is a big question. What progressive-minded folks want to hear about and want to see and want to experience? They want more money in their pockets. They want people to be able to afford childcare and transportation and rent and groceries and utilities. Like, affordability is a big, big issue. We still have an economy that where wealth is concentrated in the hands of a few, the 0.1%, and the rest of us are struggling, man. And so we want an economy that's equitable, that works for everyone, where people are earning a prevailing wage. They have the opportunity to organize and form unions if they choose to, so that they can collectively bargain and have prevailing wages and health care and affordable housing. So progressives want to hear a lot more about how the economy is moving in that direction. Progressives want to hear about how are we going to take a diplomatic approach to foreign policy, as opposed to consistently using war and bombs and weapons to kill mostly Black and brown people, including Black and brown babies and innocent women and civilians. And so what's capturing that in this moment right now is the siege and the collective punishment and the bombardment and the humanitarian crisis that's taking place in Gaza right now. So progressives want to see a path forward immediately to a permanent ceasefire and a move towards freedom for the Palestinian people. And we want to see freedom for all people all over the world, whether it's Somalia or Gaza or Yemen or wherever people are subjugated and starving and under and constantly under attack. And then in connection with that, you know, diplomacy, when we stop investing in war and start investing in our own communities, that's when we know our country is moving in the right direction. And so that is not happening at the level where we need it to happen. We spend $900 billion a year on wars. But like Tupac said, we got money for war, but can't feed the poor. We should be able to provide housing and healthy foods and everything that people need, mental health support, substance abuse support here in our country. And we're not doing enough of that. So that's what we hope to hear and see. We don't know if we're going to hear and see that, because unfortunately, during these election seasons, you know, presidents like to speak to the moderate independent voter, which translates to white people in certain communities. Mm-hmm. And so that's why young people and people of color continue to stay away from all of this. But we still need to bring them in, for sure.
Okay, fair enough. That's a good message. And we can leave on one more question, if you don't mind. As you know, I named this show Hip Hop Can Save America. And it's a lofty goal, but perhaps we need a little bit more than just hip hop. But if you could, your interpretation, when you first, I think we first crossed paths, you might have saw the logo, you might have heard about the show, you heard the concept. What did you think of, and what is your, I guess, idea of what that means?
Man, I mean, first of all, it's something that I live and breathe as a child of hip hop. It's right. Who I am. So it's like not even foreign. That statement is not foreign to me. It's kind of speaking my language. But KRS-One on the Edutainment album mentioned hip hop as a revolutionary tool to change the structure of racist America. KRS-One mentioned that in 1989, right? And I still believe it is that thing. Music itself, right? Music, the power of sound, vibration, movement, the spoken word, the creativity, it's rooted in our spiritual texts as well, whether it's the Torah, the Bible, or the Quran, right? And so hip hop is a spiritual creation and holds within it spiritual essence. And so when we talk about it as saving America, it's about America regaining its soul as a nation, or finding its soul as a nation. And leading from a moral clarity perspective, as opposed to this policing the earth and punitive and discriminatory perspective. And so that's what Hip Hop Saves America, or Can Save America, is all about. You know, when I think about it, it's what I feel in my soul. It can happen.
I appreciate that perspective. We share similar feelings about the beautiful culture. So listen, I really want to thank you for your time. I'll be actually be up in your, well, you're in Washington. I'll be in White Plains this weekend. I'll be doing a professional development for some K through 12 teachers up there. So I'll be, nice. I'll be in this stomping grounds. Saturday.
Send us the information. I want to send some staffers there to say hello.
Oh, that's what's up. We could do that. I'll definitely do that. I'll follow up with you. And in the meantime, I hope we get to cross paths again. Please keep us updated on the task force, whatever you can use from whatever audience and folks that I have paying attention to me. I'd love to be personally involved as well. We can kick it, sir. We can kick
it. Let's do it. Appreciate you, man. Thanks, Manny.
I appreciate you. Anything else you want to share with the folks, or we're good?
Peace and love, y'all. Make sure you register to vote. Make sure you go out and vote. Do your research on who's running for what, where. Don't just research president. It's not just about president. It's about, members of Congress, state legislatures, county legislators, local municipalities. Spend some time doing your homework on this stuff, y'all. It's critically important.
That's what's up. All right, we'll spread the word. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time, and I hope to cross paths again soon.
Peace and love.
Many faces.
You sick for this one. Sick for this one. Sick.
Once again, thanks for listening to another episode of Hip Hop Can Save America, a.k.a. the world's most important hip-hop podcast. My name is Manny Faces. You can find out more about the show at hiphopcansaveamerica.com. You can watch the show now as a live stream on YouTube, hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Check back for all the replays as well. The interviews from the live stream will be brought here onto the audio feed, so you always get the best of the live stream. You can also check out our Substack newsletter. It's free at mannyfaces.substack.com. Filled with stories of hip-hop innovation, inspiration, and in general, hip-hop news that isn't about dumb shit. Eternal shouts to our consulting producer, Summer McCoy. Be sure to check out her dope initiatives, Hip-Hop Hacks, and the Mixtape Museum. We'll be back soon with another dope episode, but check us out on the live stream as well. Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, hiphopcansaveamerica.com/watch. Until next time, it's Manny Faces wishing peace and love to you and yours.